These podcasts are brought to you by the U.S. Fund for UNICEF's End Trafficking Project.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Emily Pazak-Lapchik, and I'm the Program Officer for the End Trafficking Program at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. Our goals are to raise awareness about child trafficking and mobilize communities such as yourselves to take action against it. We have been doing a lot of awareness raising activities, but we think one of the best ways that people can prevent human trafficking and raise awareness is by posting the hotline. So that's why we'd like to introduce you to Alden from the Polaris Project, who is a hotline specialist.
Thanks, Emily. Hi, everybody. My name is Alden Pinkham, and I work on the National Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline, which is a program of Polaris Project. And Polaris has been around since 2002, working on the issue of human trafficking through policy advocacy, training, victim services, and of course, operating the hotline 24/7. So the hotline was begun by the Department of Health and Human Services, which has a mandate under the Trafficking Victims Protection Act to raise public awareness about trafficking and to certify victims of trafficking. Polaris Project began operating the hotline in 2007 in December, and we began operation of the hotline at that point in order to provide training and technical assistance to the field, raise public awareness, and increase identification of victims through that.
Great. Well, I think, you know, just from listening to you, it sounds like there was a real need for this kind of tool, and you, as you said, you know, you've seen an increase over the past few years, so I think it's wonderful that this resource exists. Could you talk about maybe what a typical call would look like or what a typical day at the hotline is like?
As you can imagine, there's no real typical day at the hotline. Days here are very diverse and they're very fast-paced. So we operate 24/7 out of our office in Washington, D.C. So when I first come in the morning, I'll talk with our overnight staff and see what happened on the overnight. And often we've had a crisis case. So our overnight staff are working to assist that individual in crisis while everybody else around the country is asleep. So I might come in, if we've had a crisis case, it could be a victim of sex trafficking who's called us and we've helped her get out of the situation by contacting our 24-hour law enforcement contacts. Maybe we've helped her get into a shelter so she has a safe place to stay overnight. But at the end of the day, we're still not done. So when I come in the morning, I might be looking for transportation to help her get back to her hometown if that's where she wants to go, or help her find some resources for ongoing support. But then that's just one call. So like I said, we're getting about 50 calls a day. So we have lots of people in the office all day long to field those calls. So while I'm waiting for new calls to come in, I might do research on areas where there aren't a lot of resources. Parts of the country don't have shelters for victims of trafficking, or they don't have legal providers, or they don't have dedicated law enforcement to respond to these cases. So we'll do proactive research so that when those calls come in, we have someone in place to respond to them. And then maybe mid-morning, I might get a tip, which is someone reporting information that we're going to then pass on to a law enforcement or investigative contact. So a common call might be from a family member of a missing child. So it could be a 16-year-old girl who's gone missing. The family's been trying to track her through her social networks, and they find an online posting for commercial sex in a completely different state. We might get in touch with the FBI's Crimes Against Children Unit, who will then work with locals on the ground to try to locate that missing minor. In the meantime, we'll want to think ahead about what she's going to need once she is safely returned home. So we'll suggest to the family some good ideas for empathetic listening. We'll suggest referrals to counseling services or other support services for survivors of trafficking like her. And then we have to wait because we are a hotline. We've connected this case with appropriate law enforcement contacts. And they're really the boots on the ground who are doing the hard work now on this case. But meanwhile, the calls are still coming in. So we might get a call from a room monitor at a school who wants to know more about human trafficking so she can identify potential victims among her students. So we'll send her some tips on identification and talk through ways that she can incorporate empowerment into her classroom, ways that she can educate her school staff, the principals, the counselors, on what human trafficking is. So if they have a case, they'll know what to do. And maybe in the early afternoon, a local television show will run a special where they're talking about human trafficking and they feature the hotline. And we'll get a blast of community members who have never heard about this issue, who are shocked, who want to know how to get involved. And so we'll suggest local organizations in their community that they can support through volunteering or through donations. And then maybe a survivor calls us on the hotline and she speaks Spanish, so we'll have a Spanish-speaking call specialist talk to her. And she'll have realized what happened to me was a crime. It wasn't something that I deserved. And maybe there is something that I can do about that now. So we might connect her with an attorney to help with her legal needs, or we might connect her with a counselor to help with ongoing repercussions of that. If the trafficker is still getting in touch with her, then we'll talk about safety planning, you know, ways to change your phone number or ways to keep yourself safe, even if you're out of the trafficking situation. And then maybe around the time that I'm about to leave, we'll get a call back from law enforcement on that very first case with the missing child. And they'll tell us, we've set up a sting and she was there. In fact, there were two underage girls there and we were able to recover them from the situation. And the one is being sent back home to her parents and the other is working with Child Protective Services to find a safe location for her. So great outcomes like that don't happen every day. They don't always happen that fast, but we love when we get those types of outcomes because that's when we know that our work is making a difference to individual people.
Great. Well, you know, I kind of take two things from what you just said. One, it sounds like you guys have built an incredible network around the country in all different cities, whether that's law enforcement or service providers or attorneys. I think that's really incredible that you've built that huge network in such a short amount of time. And then I also was listening to you talking about training the teachers and the community members who are calling and asking about trafficking. And my next question for you is, why is it so important for community members and everyday citizens to be aware that this is happening and it's happening in their communities, and then also to be aware of the hotline?
Mm-hmm. It's really important because some of our best tips and best circumstance cases come from community members who are paying attention. And this doesn't mean that you're, you know, prying into your neighbor's affairs or spying on people. It means that you're taking the time to notice those around you, to engage in conversation with them, and to suggest ideas. So, for example, we've had calls from people who were visited at their homes by youth who were selling magazines and cleaning products. And instead of just saying, no, I'm not interested, and slamming the door, they'll take the time to ask, like, have you had a meal today? Are you making money at your job? Is this what you expected? And then when they say no, if this homeowner has heard about human trafficking and they have our hotline number, they can help the youth call, they can call us themselves, or they could give the youth our number and say, you know, maybe things are okay for right now, but if they ever change, if you ever need help in the future, this is a confidential 24-hour number that you can call for help.
Great. And I'd just like to point out quickly to everyone that we have the UNICEF USA End Trafficking website and then also the Polaris Project website, where you'll be able to find all of the resources that we've been talking about.
Yeah, definitely check out the website's got some great information, especially for educators, as well as for a whole toolkit with 22 ways that people can get involved to fight human trafficking.
Great, thank you. So this is a great start to raising awareness and taking action. And as Alden said, just by tuning in and watching this, you've already taken the first step in the right direction. So thank you all, and we hope to see you again soon.
For more information, check out unicefusa.org/endtrafficking.